Just let me set the scene as to why we're having this discussion this afternoon. So the Daily Investor came out with an article on its platform, I think it was a couple of days ago, I'm not exactly sure, but it's a picture of Cyril Ramaphosa and Gweri Mantashe, and the byline or the headline was, "Two men cost South Africa 50,000 jobs." What a damning article it was. To try and come to grips with the article and what it is that was being said is Makone Maja, the Strategic Engagements Manager at the Institute of Race Relations. We're going to be diving into what have we done to our mining sector. Makone, thank you for being with me on Chai FM.
Very good to talk to you today, Simon.
So, Makone, your organization, Institute of Race Relations, its research paints a picture of a mining sector that's been hollowed out. It's interesting because those are the exact words used by the article of the by the Daily Investor. Hollowed out over three decades, that's the claim. So I guess when you look at the long arc of decline, what's the single most important thing that we as South Africans need to understand about how we got here?
I think it's definitely been informed by poor policy choices in the last three decades, as you say, that have resulted in a decline of the mining sector that is today a shell of its former self. We were looking at indicators such as job losses in the last 25 to 20 years, the decline in our mining exploration expenditure, which I think is the most telling of all the numbers. Mining exploration, as you know, is very integral to the mining cycle. It begins with the systematic locating and evaluating of mineral deposits in the country. And South Africa used to tower at roughly 5% of global mineral exploration. And today that number has fallen to below 1%. And as we document in the Free Facts, which is what the Daily Investor is covering, South Africa used to get just about 6.3 billion rands in exploration expenditure. So these are potential investors coming into South Africa to survey the land and explore where, you know, possible mineral deposits could lie. This is back in 2006. And a mere 20 years later, that number is just 700 million. As you can tell, it's a significant drop in the number of investors who are interested in prospecting South African land for mining opportunities. And what that has resulted in, we argue, is job losses, right? We're trying to show a straight line between poor policy choices and how it affects everyday people. And we show that between 2001 and 2024, the mining sector has lost 47,000 jobs. And I know you are, as I did, Simon, imagine the number of families, the tens of thousands of community members who mining was once a lifeline for whom jobs have just been snuffed out again by that handshake you see in that Daily Investor article by our president and the Minister of Minerals, who have played an integral role in introducing some of those detrimental policies that we believe have caused the hollowing out of the mining industry.
It's as if you have just hit me in the stomach. I mean, to hear those numbers, they are nothing short of frightening. You talk about 47,000 jobs. I mean, that is a big, that's a big town. That's a big town full of people. And the article makes it worse than that, because they talk about that's ostensibly the job losses. They're saying it could be as high as 500,000 in reality. Which is, I don't know, in the context of South Africa, I don't know to what extent one person supports others, but I would imagine the figures between 4, 5, or 6. So that's what you've got to do. You've got to times that figure. You're talking about 2-3 million people affected by the hollowing out of this industry. It's nothing short of frightening. I want to move on to this issue of policy choices, because clearly that's where the issue lies. And I'm just wondering, in practical terms, what does policy uncertainty look like for a mining company wanting to operate in South Africa? Make it real for me, this idea of policy uncertainty.
I think for one critical issue that you could consider there is the issue of property rights, right? And the effective nationalization of mining rights that was done under the Mining Charter 20, 30 years ago, that has created a lot of uncertainty in terms of how much investors can really depend on their rights over the life cycle of a mine. And that has engendered a lot of questions for those investors who are just looking around and saying, well, actually, we don't have to deal with this. We can go into countries where those rights are secure, they're certain, and they're not obscured. Also, when you think about the amount of discretion that these the Mining Charter, as well as the Minerals and Petroleum Act, deposits into the minister, it's just too much. Licensure is not objective. There's an enormous amount of discretion that is deposited into the hands of the minister that causes inefficiencies and delays. And there's also opportunities for corruption that obviously arise there, right? When one person exercises a lot of discretion, there's very little opportunities for oversight. And so those are some of the things that have created those issues of uncertainty within the mining sector that just have investors looking around and saying, well, we can go to countries that are more welcoming of our capital without having to deal with the rigmarole of South African laws. And I also think people are tempted to say, Simon, when we talk about the decline of the mining sector, that, oh, this is because, so much of South Africa's deposits, mineral deposits, have already been mined out. You often hear the slide set about gold, about how much gold in the world came from the Witwatersrand
Deposits,
basin. And it's just not true, which is what we're also telling in that story in the Free Facts. We display that the opportunities for mining in South Africa are plentiful because South Africa still has a significant share of global reserves in metals such as platinum group metals at 88%, manganese at 80%, chromite at 72%, gold still
Wow,
13%, which is
these
quite significant.
stats.
And even in minerals that are integral to developing green technologies, right, which are all the rage right now. So South Africa has missed out on those windfalls, not just in the gold boom that we saw these last couple of months owing to, increase in fuel prices, but also in those green technology minerals that a lot of Western countries and even countries like China and Russia are
Yes.
sourcing out right now.
You've also been quoted in that article as having described the licensing system as a regulatory maze. Give me a sense of what that actually means and how long would it take for a corporation to acquire a mining license? What's this maze you're referring to?
Yes, so this is the idea that obtaining a mining license in South Africa is just rigged with obstacle after obstacle and hurdle after hurdle. When you think of race-based rules in South Africa, they also introduce licensing regulations in terms of who can be awarded a license. In terms of the duration that it takes to award a potential mine a license in South Africa, I'm actually not sure on the exact number. But I do know that South Africa is not, it's quite an anomaly in the length of time that it does take to deliver those licensing. And those inefficiencies also cause a lot of delays. You'll remember that there was an issue about gas exploration
Yes,
along
yes.
one of South Africa's coast. And when you think of gas, it doesn't stay in one place, right? It moves, it travels. And when licensing is delayed with something such as gas, that causes the opportunity to be missed and the window of
I didn't
opportunity
know
to be
that.
closed in terms of whether, yes, in terms of whether exploration can be performed there, which resulted in Shell ultimately withdrawing that project entirely, to say, it's taking too long. And this is where people were, our journalists were reporting that countries such as Namibia were eating South Africa's lunch because they were more efficient at issuing out countries like Botswana as well, issuing those licenses, timeously, unlike us.
I want to go back to the main contention of the article where they pointed fingers at Ramaphosa and Mantashe. Peter Major said that Ramaphosa and Mantashe ignore the industry's warnings and they played a direct role in hundreds of thousands of job losses. Difficult question for you, but do you agree with that assessment? And why do you think the concerns weren't taken seriously?
I do agree. I think that there's a big commitment, an ideological commitment in South Africa where mining is concerned. I think partly owing to, you know, the history of mining and labor that, you know, in South Africa. But I also think just the irrational commitment to policies that clearly do not work. And sometimes in the name of things like transformation, right? Now, we must think, is it a worthy trade-off that the transformation of C-suite positions has come at the expense of potentially 47,000 jobs? Is that the sort of trade-off we are making in the name of so-called transformation? I think just ultimately it's proven very difficult to influence government. But I think as, you know, time goes on and we see more and more parties represented in parliament, we will see that change. We will see other ideas being ventilated, which is what we have experienced because we are proposing that government adopt our mining bill as an alternative, which is the Growth and Employment and Mining Bill, or shortly the GEM bill, to bring back that certainty for investors and to cut political discretion and red tape. And we've seen various members of parliament take to it and be receptive to it, to adopting it as a private member's bill. So I think ultimately there has always been this difficulty of penetrating and influencing government because of the hegemonic rule of one political party in South Africa. But that grip will loosen as time goes on.
Makone Maja, that was such a fascinating discussion. Thank you so much for chatting to me here on Chai FM. That was Makone Maja, the Strategic Engagements Manager at the Institute of Race Relations.